Welcome to the Gray Divorce Podcast, hosted by divorce financial analyst and retirement planning counselor, Andrew Hatherley. Join Andrew and guest experts as they help late life divorcees build the financial and mental foundation for a meaningful future. There is life after divorce. Now, on to the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Gray Divorce Podcast. In this episode, we finish our two-part series on coaching people going through divorce. In the last episode, we spoke to Nanette Murphy, who focuses on coaching women. Today, I'm speaking to Bob Wisher. Bob is a certified life and health coach and self-described relationship engineer. He's the founder of Heart Forged Coaching and the host of the Men Becoming Better Men podcast. After Bob's painful midlife divorce, he dedicated himself to learning how to re-engineer his life and transform his mindset to create powerful and transformational results. He's now dedicated to helping men create lasting change through discovering their purpose, enhancing their relationships, and embracing their authentic selves. Bob, welcome to the Gray Divorce Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Well, you're very welcome. Glad to have you here. You know, I'm curious about the term relationship engineer. Could you kind of give me some background on that?
Yeah. Relationship engineer stems from what I've basically done for over 30 years of working in the corporate automotive design and manufacturing area. For decades, I've managed relationships between members of teams, including customers and management, to design and build various components for major automakers. And along the way, I've worked in a lot of high-pressure situations. I also left a 19-year marriage in 2023. I have two adult children, and they're both currently in medical school. And I've been married to my amazing wife, Lisa, for the last 5 years, and added two additional stepkids in that process. So what all that experience has taught me is that everything has a solution, and no problem is too big to solve somehow, especially when it comes to relationships.
That sounds like a very male type of attitude, that things can be fixed.
Yeah, everything. If you've read Marie Forleo's book, everything is figure-outable, right?
So they say.
It's one of my favorite books.
So would you say, I'm curious, because I asked Nanette this question about her working exclusively with women, and obviously she doesn't have anything against men at all. It's just that she felt more comfortable working with women. Mm-hmm. What about your focus on working with men? I mean, answer the simple question, why men? Why not women as well?
Why men? Simply just, it's where my heart is. We have a phrase in my men's group, something along the lines of basically don't turn your back on a man in whose eyes you see pain. And when I first heard that, it really struck me, because, you know, we can walk around and you can see, and actually I experienced it this weekend. I'll use that as a perfect example. I was with a man this past weekend, and I could tell there was something heavy on his heart all weekend long. And I kind of prompted him a few times to try to get him to open up. And it took him till about the last 15 minutes of us being together for him to actually say, you know, I could really use some prayers for my marriage. And we kind of left it at that. We parted ways at that point. I've reached out to him since, and I'm sure we will have an ongoing conversation. But point being, I've met so many men who get devastated by divorce, just broken and don't know what to do, because that was, you know, they poured everything, their finances, their energy, their effort, everything into building these marriages and kids and their kids' sports and everything all on top of each other. And then last statistic I'd seen, like 70% of marriages are facilitated by the wife.
Initiated by
the wife, yeah. And so that means 70% of these men going through a divorce are potentially blindsided or literally crushed by the fact that this person that I've poured into for 10, 20, 30, 50 years doesn't want me here anymore. It's just, it's devastating for men. I wasn't in that situation specifically, but I've seen it enough to where it just really makes me want to, basically take these men and just give them a big hug and say, dude, it's going to be okay. We will figure this out. You do have additional purpose. That it wasn't your only purpose in life. You've got more to do. You are on this planet still because you have more to do and more to accomplish. So don't give up.
You raise a number of very interesting points there. You know, the one about the conversation with a gentleman who only in the towards the end of the conversation divulged some of those vulnerable details. I mean, that's typical of men. I mean, we're much more hesitant in opening up. And you know what you say about the statistic about women initiating, I think I've heard that several times from women as well, about the potential consequences there. I've given a couple of presentations on gray divorce recently to various groups, and I make a point that was made in a book by Jocelyn Crowley about gray divorce, and she refers to the penalties that men and women face in mid to late life divorce. And certainly I think it's well documented, and certainly the academic research substantiates that generally women face a harsher economic penalty than women. Not to say men don't face an economic penalty, because all our net worths are essentially being split in two. But in terms of standard of living, some very reliable statistics indicating that women take a bigger hit there. But what's less discussed, and part of the reason maybe, as you say, men's reticence to discuss it, is the social penalty. And, some academic research has been done in that field, most notably by Thomas Leopold, and Crowley mentions this as well in her book, about the social penalty faced by men in terms of health declines, higher risk of adopting bad habits, deteriorating relationships with children, and dissatisfaction with custodial arrangements for those younger divorcees, and a greater overall feeling of loneliness and social isolation. I mean, that's what the academic research is showing. But and the fact that I'm talking to you, not a lot of coaches out there working with men specifically around divorce. And in full disclosure, you're not a certified divorce coach. You're a life and certified life and health coach, but working with a lot of men going through divorce, right?
Yes. And I have a lot of experience with
and you have, of course, as well. And of course you have that very important personal experience. But I was wondering if you could comment, on what I mentioned about the social penalty and you see that as well in the men that you work with?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's actually the reason I created my group, Men Becoming Better Men. It's the name of the podcast as well, but the genesis of that group was because I saw a need for men, not only in the post-divorce, but actually a lot of the men, I'd probably say out of the 40 or so men that have joined the group, I would say a good 65-70% of them have experienced divorce. And they come to, they're actually seeking the only way they can find my group is to be seeking, because we run it through a meetup app. So they get on the app, they find the group, and then they come, they can show up at the meeting. But that's about the majority of men find it. And it's because, excuse me, because they're looking for that connection that they lost, whether it was the spouse or the kids or all of the above. Additionally, like you said, socially, their health deteriorates. I was a perfect example of that. When I got divorced, I ballooned up. I got up to about 240 pounds. I'm only 5'10". And it took me about three years after the divorce to realize, thanks to my doctor who told me I was pre-diabetic and developing fatty liver disease, that I needed to get my act together. And I went hardcore and lost 60 pounds. And it made a huge difference in my confidence, in my motivation, and then all the things that have transpired since 2016. That's actually about the same time when I realized what coaching was, the benefits of it. I hired a coach myself, went through that process, found it absolutely empowering and amazing, and decided to become one myself.
You know, some parallels there with what my discussion with Nanette a few weeks ago, the importance, the key importance of health to rebuilding your life, before, during, and after divorce, from some of these negative consequences. It's just, it can really set a positive chain in motion, mm-hmm. and do wonders for your confidence. No, I mean, dropping, you missed, how much weight did you lose?
60 pounds.
Wow.
60 pounds.
I know I saw similar benefit to, I started working out and just started feeling better. And, not only with respect to weight loss and fitting my clothes better, but just the mental approach to my day was always stronger after working out. And now I find that I go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week, and it's as much for the mental benefits as the physical.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I kind of took it hardcore. I actually started at age 57. I think I was around. I started doing CrossFit. And it was life-changing. Not only I got healthier, lost the weight, formed some new social avenues, right? From people in the gym, because so CrossFit's known as a very social, interactive type of way to work out. And then it just snowballed from there to all the other things and all the other benefits, things that I've done in the last 7-8 years that have completely changed my life from what it used to be.
Don't you have to be careful in CrossFit though, to what you do with everything, I suppose, but my trainers told me to watch out for injury in CrossFit.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. As I've gotten older, I've lessened the amount of exertion I put towards my CrossFit, and my workouts, just because, the body doesn't, the wear and tear of 50 years does not transit. I mean, there's a lot of people that do it at that age and can be, but I was not one of them. I've got a couple injuries actually that prevent me from doing all of what I would like to do, but it's still fun and it's still a great workout. And I'd recommend it if people were needed that extra, social to go along with the working out to get them motivated, because that's what it was for me.
That's very important. And once again, it's the ancillary benefits of the working out, whether it be mental health or socialization. Mm-hmm. And this is one why I mentioned injuries, because of course you could suffer a reversal, and I've seen with friends in the past have mental health issues when they've suffered an injury and have been isolated because they haven't been able to go out and be part of the group. And they've been, stuck with their leg, up in traction or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
So obviously fitness is a key to kind of a rebuild or a reset. With your work with men, what else do you advise them? I mean, how does it work when you coach somebody or a group, and what are the distinctions between working with individuals and working with a group, and what does the process look like?
One-on-one or a group, the things I try to work on are integrity, connection, and purpose. Those are my big three.
Let's slow that down. Integrity,
connection, and purpose.
All right. Okay. Well, let's deal with those then.
Yeah. So, I'll give my example for integrity is when I was leading up to and going through my divorce, I wasn't living with integrity with myself or other people. I'd break commitments mostly to myself. Like back then before I went and started doing CrossFit, I would work out. But then as soon as it would get hard, or maybe I would get sick for a little while, I'd quit. that I wasn't honoring my commitment to want to get healthier. I was giving myself excuses. Then I would isolate, you know, from friends and family at that point, so I didn't have to hear complaints from my wife. I'd spend hundreds of hours on simulation games. I had no solid real life friendships and no man that I could actually talk to or rely on during those dark days of my divorce. I was mainly alone. And then lastly, I had no idea what to do with my life now that there was no marriage to maintain. My kids were mostly on their own. My career, my day job was difficult, and it was really, you know, kind of sucking the life from me. And I was totally alone, and I felt like I didn't have anything to live for. So what I started working on was the integrity, you know, being impeccable with your word, honoring your commitments, being on time for things. We have a whole list of what we call standards that we work together on and learn what they're about, B, why they're important, and then C, implement them and live them on a daily basis. That leads then to connection, because once you have the ability to connect with yourself in that way, where you're in integrity, you're in alignment with yourself, it's much easier to connect with other people. That's where we then start working on those social things, whether it, like I said, CrossFit or, you know, going to meetups, going to networking events. I got one of my friends in my men's group. He actually started singing in a barbershop quartet.
Wow.
That's because he was very musically inclined. He enjoyed singing. He went and started doing this barbershop quartet. And it's kind of the only thing he talks about now. He's like, oh, you guys got to come see me. I'm like, you know, barbershop quartet, not really my jam, but he loves it. And he gets not only the fun of expressing himself artistically, but he's making more connections and more friends and through it. So it's absolutely awesome. And then the third part, once we get that connection back, now you can start looking towards purpose. It's, you know, the marriage is gone. You know, maybe I have a career that I love or don't love. Maybe it's not completely floating my boat. It's not in alignment, which it isn't for me. I love serving and helping people. I don't love so much making car parts, but being able to then identify and find those things that really do motivate you, those things that really, you know, that I call them the things that make the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Because I can get to the end of a call with a client, and I'll be walking on air. I mean, just to be able to be in service of somebody and do what I think I'm meant to be doing, and I'm being in alignment versus doing, you know, my day job, which doesn't fulfill me at all. So being able to help a man narrow down his purpose through some specific tools and processes that I've used. It's totally amazing when a man, you can actually see it in his eyes when the light bulb goes on, and he's like, oh my God, that's what I've been missing for my entire life, is, you know, this feeling of knowing what I want to do and being in alignment with who I am and what I'm supposed to be. It's mind-blowing.
You raise some really interesting points there with those three areas of integrity, connection, and purpose, and I can relate to all of them. And, you know, I think you're starting off with integrity is a classic, because when you said integrity, I thought truth, and I'm thinking being honest to yourself, and being certainly being honest to others, but perhaps even more important, being honest with yourself. And recognizing, particularly after a situation like divorce, that, you know, maybe there were some things about yourself that that led to this happening, and maybe maybe we can hit the reset button a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a classic example of that too. I know there was, like, looking back over the 19 years that I was married the first time, I know I did things wrong, and I'm not too stubborn or proud to say that it was. You know, it was either all her fault or all my fault. I mean, we shared in that, but I can look back now and see, because of the things I've learned, that where I was going off the rails, the things I wasn't doing that I should have been doing, and the things I could have avoided, or maybe, I don't know. We still had a lot of fundamental issues, as far as what we like to do and things in common. And so there was always that, but there were other things I could have done to maybe lessen the impacts of those.
Yeah. You know, and you mentioned connection, and I'm thinking about the link between integrity and your being your true self and being honest to yourself and connection. And you mentioned your friend with the barbershop quartet. You know, I've got a good friend. He's a hardcore ukulele fan, and he's in this group, and you know, I mean, he gets a lot of eye rolling from his friends, I know, but he certainly built a strong connection with these ukulele players, and I think it's done. It certainly lights him up, and has opened up a lot of connections, which I think as men, it's easier for us to make connections over shared interests. I think we're much less likely to meet a person at a social function and open our hearts. I think women can do that
yep,
much
absolutely.
Much more easily than men. But we have this thing about trying to be men and
cool
and masculine and all this sort of thing. And we don't want to appear weak or vulnerable. I suppose that's the best way to describe it.
And that's exactly what, like I said, I experienced this weekend with this man. He struggled for probably 2 days to realize that it's okay to be vulnerable with, you know, when you actually realize that somebody cares and they're there to listen and walk with you on your path and on your journey to try to help you out of whatever hole that you've dug yourself into, it becomes very easy to let that all go, but you've got to get to that point. And the only way you do that is trust and talking to somebody that you trust and talking to somebody that, I think a lot of it is fear of judgment, right?
Right.
Fear of failure, fear of judgment. Those are two other big ones that I work on, and just being able to get to that point where you can let your hair down, so to speak. I don't have a lot of it, but, it's powerful, and it's the beginning of transformation. When you can get to that point, it's the beginning of your transformation. And who knows where you can go if you lean into it and trust it.
Well, as part of that transformation, how does the third element that you just brought up, purpose, come into that? Because I know a lot of people have difficulty figuring out what their purpose is and distinguishing between, you know, the whole idea of follow your bliss, which I think is overrated. I think I'm more inclined to say follow your strengths, because then you're more likely to do good in the world and get that feedback. But we can talk about that.
Ultimately, you want to be in a spot where those two things intersect each other. To me, purpose is so big. Again, I've worked in the automotive industry for 30 years, and for a majority of that, I have dreaded getting up and going to work every day. I've made a very good living for myself. I can't complain about that. There's a lot of things that I can do that I know a lot of people can't do because of what I do for a living. And honestly, my job is fairly easy for my skill sets. But that feeling of being out of alignment day after day, year after year, it wore on me to such an extent where I was like, I've got to get back to that bliss, you know, move the needle back more to that bliss side. What brings me joy and what brings me, just fulfillment. And it was a major, major turning point. It's funny there, around the time that I was, starting this process and going through all that, there's a country group named Old Dominion. And one of the lines in their song is, chase after the dream, don't chase after the money.
Right.
And the minute I heard that, it just made so much sense, because I was, growing up in the Detroit area here in Michigan, it's very automotive focused, right? All through my life, my grandfather, my dad was in automotive industry for a long time. It's kind of like you're following in the family business, and you just go down that road and down that path. Not, even though I knew inside that I wanted to do something more service oriented, service related, but that pull just kept bringing me back to, where the family wanted me to be, not where I wanted to be.
Well, there's a key issue there. And, I wanted to ask you while you were discussing your job, have you found that you've been able to apply your skill set and perhaps the skill set that you use at work to the work that you're doing with men in your coaching?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's because there's a huge part of coaching is accountability, and a huge part of my career has been holding people accountable for what they're supposed to be doing. So there are a lot of similarities. And like I said, I owe a lot to my career and what I've done, because it's enabled me and given me the depth and breadth of experience to, like I said earlier, and to know problems can be solved and then how to work towards them. Putting the tactical steps together. I have this problem, so I know I need to do this, 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 and this. I need to do these, this one has to happen in a week. This one has to happen in 3 days. This, here's the steps, here's the process. And coaching is similar to that, in that, most men would, like I said, for example, purpose. I want to understand what my purpose is. Okay, well, we need to do these three things or these six things to get you from where you are to where you want to be in an efficient and growth oriented manner, instead of, because I'll a lot of times, for example, a client will want to work out, they'll want to get lose weight, exercise, and they'll say, yeah, I want to work out 7 out of 7 days. Well, to go from 0 to 7 days is insanity, right? So when I always pull the reins back on a little bit, why don't we start with 2 or 3 days? And let's accomplish that, and let's build those steps, build that momentum and the foundation to get you to, eventually, if down the road you can be working 7 out of 7 if that's what you want. But stepping your way there and going through a process is very much what I've done in my regular day job career, I call it.
Well, I think the key word there is process, because it's through those small steps and the habits. I think if you build the habit of going to the gym 3 times a week, there's a much better chance you're still going to be doing that 2, 3, 4 years down the road than if you try to perform miracles and really overdo it, initially. You mentioned money, and I think this is key, and this is why I talked about emphasizing your strengths, which is what you're doing, but ultimately, if what you're setting your mind on isn't feasible, then ultimately it's not going to work if you can't end up being compensated for it. And this kind of takes me to the famous Japanese concept, the ikigai, which I don't know if you're familiar.
Yep, I was going to mention that earlier.
Yeah, well, the Venn diagram of the four components is doing what you love, but also doing what you're good at, but also doing what people need.
Yeah.
But then there's that fourth key ingredient,
getting paid
and be compensated
it.
For it. And when if those four intersect, then you might find yourself on a pretty good path.
Absolutely.
You mentioned when you were talking about purpose, things. You use different words, but I relate with different words. And you talk about things that motivate you. I think about things that energize you, and things that I've heard someone refer to them as above the line activities, and then below the line activities. I mean, we've all got cutting the grass is probably a below the line activity for most people, taking out the trash, although some people may get a strange satisfaction from doing so. But there are other higher level activities that can energize us. And then I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of flow, but there was a, I think it was it Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi? He has like a 10 syllable last name.
Csikszentmihalyi or something.
Yeah, something like that. The whole idea of doing something where you lose time, lose track of time because you're so engaged in it. I think that's pretty core. But you mentioned specific tools because, you know, these things are good, and I find myself in flow in certain things, but I don't think I can get paid for it. I mean, I can be in flow, like maybe playing the guitar, but I don't think anybody's going to pay to see me play guitar. You mentioned specific tools for finding purpose. Could you share a couple of those with us?
I've got a shorthand version and a longhand version.
Give us a shorthand version because we're like a minute away from half an hour, and we try and be disciplined on the Creative Wars podcast.
So you catch me off guard. I got to go from memory. The first question would be something to the effect of, what do you value? What are two things that you value in life? So in my case, it was service and faith. I gotta have to write these down so I don't forget. Service and faith. The second question is, how do you present those? How do you put those out into the world? Mine were inspire. I like to inspire people, and I like to encourage. And then the last of those three, the three questions is, what is your ideal view of the world? So mine would be for everyone to be physically, mentally, and spiritually healthy. So then you take those, that handful of words you just created, and you put it into a sentence. So mine would be something like, I use my my desire to serve and my faith to inspire and encourage people to be physically, mentally, and spiritually healthy. That would be a purpose statement.
Okay. And then you've got to get specific with it though. And you do that through your coaching work.
Yeah. Yeah. Understanding that that's, you know, the core of you, that's, you know, your values, the way you like to put things into the world, and what your ultimate goal is in life. You put those things together, it gives you a very good insight. Yeah. It doesn't tell you that you want to be an astronaut, or it doesn't tell you want to be a life coach or a financial advisor. It doesn't tell you specifically, but at least puts you on the path to say, okay, I'm currently, you know, a garbage collector. Well, am I inspiring faith and people to be physically, mentally, and spiritually healthy through that? No, not really. So it definitely tells you where you shouldn't be going. Doesn't always tell you where you should be going, but at least it gives you a path to get on, so that as you look at different things, you can check, you can, you know, it's kind of a direction check, right?
Right, right. Yeah, it's not, for some, it's more of a challenge to find than it is for others. And, you know, I've always said that, you know, maybe they say don't quit your day job. And of course I laugh at that because I did precisely that in 1995. I quit a high paying job on Wall Street to go write screenplays in Hollywood. So, unfortunately it didn't work out so great. So, that's why I'm a little suspicious or skeptical, let's say, of following your bliss. Having said that, maybe in the grand scheme of things, I've learned some good life lessons through doing that. So I guess, you know, maybe when I say the thing about emphasizing strengths is that if we can find something in the jobs we're doing that can perhaps elevate the cause of those to along the three components that you mentioned, maybe that'd be a good start, or volunteering even.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I have another much deeper one, but it takes about a half an hour to step you through. It goes into a lot more depth of, you know, within values. And, even though one of the questions in that sequence is what did you like to do, or what did you want to be when you grew up? What did you dream of as a kid?
Right.
So for me, it was firefighter. Always wanted to be a firefighter. So what that in this whole equation of questions and things that we evaluate, it says that I wanted to be in service. I wanted to help. I wanted to be, somewhat of a hero, try to help people out of, and then that kind of can direct you towards that purpose as well.
No, I think that that's a great question. The one about what you wanted to be as a kid, because kids get into that flow state.
Absolutely.
Where they're doing things and they lose track of time. And the mother's always out in the balcony calling them in because they're in a flow state, enjoying themselves so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was 9 years old, I wanted to be a writer. It wasn't until after my post-divorce journey that I ended up actually writing a book.
Nice.
But it happened eventually. But I think part of it was getting back to that the question of that mm-hmm. one prompting question that you had. Look, if any of our listeners are interested in finding out more about that half hour process of delving into purpose, how can they get a hold of you?
Best way to do that right now is through Instagram. You can find me at The Relationship Engineer on Instagram. Actually, I do have a link in that profile as well. I've got two free resources there. The first is a ebook that is about the five foundations to improve your relationships. So again, that would potentially cater to pre-divorce. If you're in that methodology, you think maybe there's things you're not doing right, that'd be a great resource for you to start with. Mm-hmm. And then if you are post-divorce, I also have a 30-day divorce healing challenge, which will walk you through some of the very steps that I've taken to rebuild my life. And it's a pretty powerful little program. It's a little awkward and bulky because of where I built it. But it steps through on a 30-day. It gives you little assignments every day to work on. And it's been pretty successful for a lot of people. So
once again, how do people find that?
There's a link on my Instagram, okay. A little link tree on my Instagram, and that'll go to a menu where you can select from those couple things.
And your Instagram handle again is
The Relationship Engineer, all one word.
Okay. Terrific. Have I missed anything? Is there anything that you want to get off your chest or, feel that, we haven't covered suitably?
No, I don't think so. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your inviting me on. And, I have a huge heart for people that have got to experience divorce in one way or another, whether they're the ones leaving or they're the ones being left. And regardless, it's tragic. The things it does for children. I've put my kids through a lot, and I regret that part of it. Probably the biggest regret of my life is the things that I've done that have impacted my kids and made them question my faith in them or my love for them. So that's probably the most important message. Again, if anyone's in that process, take care of those kids, because they yes, they're resilient. Yes, they will bounce back, but it doesn't mean it don't hurt when they're going through it.
Right. Oh, good words of advice. Look, well, thank you very much, Bob. We appreciate you having me on the podcast today. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Gray Divorce Podcast. To learn more or get in contact with your host, you can visit Andrew's website at transcendretirement.net. Also, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
Information provided is educational only and should not be construed as legal or tax advice. Each situation is unique and should be discussed with your tax or legal advisor prior to implementation. Andrew Hatherley is not an attorney and does not provide legal advice. Information provided is financial in nature. Advisory services offered through Hatherley Capital Management, LLC. Divorce financial analysis services offered through Wiser Divorce Solutions, an affiliated company.